Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 232, featuring Jake Williams and Greg Rogers from WeWork. A lot of you may know who WeWork is. Some of you may not. WeWork is actually now known as the We Company. WeWork is just part of the We Company. But WeWork is really what a lot of people know. So if you don't know what it is, let's say you're Steve Jobs and you want to start a new company. You could just basically do it inside of your garage, which is what Steve Jobs did. But sometimes making a company outside of your garage, inside your garage, is not a good idea. You may need a conference room. You may need a mail room. You may need better internet or whatever it is. And that's a challenge these days. And as you know, there's so many startups that are going on everywhere that, if you have two or three people and you need a little bit of an office space, you can't do it. Well, WeWork is that solution. And what they do is they basically create these big office spaces where people have a small footprint for themselves, but also share all the common resources like conference rooms, mail, et cetera, receptionist. And that is a really cool idea. So popular it has become that they are now opening something like, I think they said like 20 offices a month, which is, big collaborative spaces. And that's a big way to figure out what to do is, Jake and Greg are out there with their team creating visualizations for all these spaces so people know where they are, what's going to look like. So if you're in Johannesburg and you got a startup you want to do in Johannesburg, WeWork will basically show you what that office space will look like, and you'll be able to move forward. Really fantastic and interesting idea. Very, very cool stuff. And they came to Total Chaos 2019 in Sofia, and they gave a great talk about that work. So we were able to do a podcast with them. So it was really interesting. All right, before I move on, a couple of announcements. Like I said, we did Total Chaos with Jake and Greg in Sofia, but we are now expanding that brand. So now Total Chaos will be coming to SIGGRAPH 2019. We used to do our talks and call them the V-Ray Days talks. We are now sort of broadening it and calling it Total Chaos. So it's much not just about V-Ray, but a lot of the other stuff that's going on at Chaos Group. It will be happening July 30th and 31st. There is a lot more information, including registering for this, that is available on our website. Just go to chaosgroup.com/SIGGRAPH2019 and get all your information there, including how to register. But I'm going to give you some quick highlights. July 30th, Vlado will be talking about Vlado and Renderland. Always a good talk. Everyone loves the Vlado and Renderland talks. And he'll be talking about all the new technology and as well as all the cool stuff that we've done recently. Andra, from our amazing Corona team, is going to be there as well. And he's going to be talking about caustics and about all the new ways that they're doing caustics and making them way more accessible to people. I am in the middle of writing a blog post about this, and I can tell you that you really want to go to this talk, because I don't think people realize how important caustics are and how much we have been ignoring them for decades. And the contributions they have to offer to renderings are something that are sorely missed. And Andra will be outlining all of that. Also, Grant Miller will be there to talk about the amazing work they've been doing at Ingenuity Studios using V-Ray for Houdini. And they've been using that on the beta for a long time, and they've been amazing contributors. They gave a talk at Total Chaos in Sofia back in May, and they will be giving a similar talk at SIGGRAPH. So go check that out. On the 31st, Yaroslav, again from our Czech team, will be there as well. And he'll be talking about going beyond rendering in terms of some of the stuff we're doing and pushing the boundaries of what rendering can do for color and how that can affect 3D printing. I really think you guys should just go to do that. If you're interested in 3D printing, interested in rendering, check that out. Kirk Shintani from A52 Elastic will be talking about how Game of Thrones main title sequence for the last 10 years and how the evolution of how they've used V-Ray for all of those 10 years, for all the sequences they've done for the main titles of Game of Thrones has been used. So very much looking forward to that. Very excited. We also will be having a panel that day on women in technology, which was a great success when we did it at Total Chaos. And so we're going to bring that over to a SIGGRAPH as well. All right, guys. Hopefully you will enjoy this incredible podcast with Jake Williams and Greg Rogers. And we look forward to seeing you at Total Chaos SIGGRAPH Edition 2019.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I think what's important for us is to sort of look at and explain to the audience what exactly WeWork is and what this is, because I think it's very interesting and I think people should get a better idea from your point of view what this is. So who wants to go first?
I could start with that sort of outline.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, WeWork, which is now called the We Company, has been around for, it's getting close to a decade. It is a community-based company which focuses on co-working, co-living, multiple outlets of community-driven business lines.
Right.
And so in doing so, it opens up a lot of opportunities for architectural visualization to come in and start visualizing these spaces well before they even open. Or if it's the early stages of design, we're here to facilitate, you know, the needs of the designers and architects, but mainly focusing on the marketing and sales needs.
Right.
Because, you know, if we're opening up, when we started 3.5 years ago, we were opening up maybe 5 locations a month.
Okay.
Around the world.
So what are these WeWork spaces exactly? What? I mean, it's a space, but you can, it's a collaborative work environment of some kind, right?
So entrepreneurs, one person, 2 people, 20 people could all rent office space in a building and all share the space, share the kitchen, share the community area.
Right.
And WeWork manages that location so people can pretty much just come in, work, and leave. Everything is taken care of for them. Like the toilet paper, even.
Yeah, so if you're like a small startup of some kind and you're doing something, you basically say, you have a, it's like a fully functioning office.
Right.
Without having to worry about all the things that you need to do for a fully functioning office. So it's a service in a sense. And everyone, since all these different people are working there, everyone shares the cost of the overhead together as a community, right?
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think for us, it's a great chance to, you know, work with the marketing and sales team to, as we grow to opening now 25 to 30 locations a month,
it's a lot.
So that averages almost like 1 to 2 a day.
Uh-huh.
And so we, you know, we have about 70 locations in New York. So there's very little reason for our visualization department to render out and create visuals for the 71st location, because you could turn around and see a WeWork on every block in New York City. So
right.
We focus on the new markets around the world.
Okay.
Where we don't yet have a footprint. So we create a digital footprint, a digital story, if you will, of what that WeWork is going to look like in Johannesburg or Edinburgh or Stockholm.
Okay.
Really focusing on what makes each one of these new markets so unique.
Right. What are you guys noticing about the different markets and how are you learning about those that stuff?
We learn from previous openings,
right.
Previous designs. We gain data from every building we've ever opened to have a more data-driven design process for the future. But as far as what each location around the globe, you know, how it stands out from one another is really the community space, the local sort of vibe that is unique to that area that we want to represent, whether it be working with local vendors when it comes to art and graphics,
mm-hmm.
Really trying to make sure that they get a, a sense of that we're aware that of who they are as a community,
mm-hmm.
and trying to tell a story around that.
Yeah.
Yeah, each new region has come with some challenges of modeling furniture.
Right.
Basically, each region that we've broken into requires us to then model some custom furniture on a per project basis because, oh, we've never opened a location in South Africa before.
Right.
This means we're speccing a whole new line of furniture, and for our team, that means, okay, we're going to have to find where these exist online, or we're going to be modeling them ourselves.
Right.
So, and that's multiplied across 8-9 regions now.
Okay.
So that's become kind of something that's like a burden to our team. Each new region we break into, this is what it means.
Right. And so you have to create these big, you know, visualizations, obviously, for spaces and new environments that you've created. And you probably have a big kit of parts that you've been able to assemble over the ideas of things, and then sort of say, this is what your new office space could look like, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, throughout the years, we've standardized most things that we can to say, if it's the same storefront that we're using in every single location.
Yep.
We've got that set on a rail clone now.
That's okay.
In our library to say, yep. It's not worth our time to remodel this every single project. That
right.
Allows us, so the more things that we can automate, the more things that we can kind of spend creative time on.
Right.
And that kind of build off that is that the reason why our studio is so unique is because our process is pretty similar, like day after day. So we're creating the same sort of WeWork spaces.
Uh-huh.
But like you said, if we automate the HVAC, because if we're doing HVAC every time and starting from scratch, that's a waste.
Right.
Time. So we're finding key moments of our workflow that we were used to in the past and acknowledging the fact that we could take it one step further and standardize and optimize certain kind of not really the biggest creative focus point
mm-hmm.
of our workflow. So we could remove that,
right.
Spend maybe 10% of our time on the storefront and the HVAC and the floor. So
right.
We do that the same every time.
Yeah.
And that gets us to move on to really nailing down the lighting, the materials,
right.
The modeling, and then the entourage, the story. That's what really sells an image.
Okay, so besides, you know, furniture differences or different kitchens and stuff, do you feel that you have to dress or render or use different styles for different markets in terms of the marketing? Like, do you find, like, some want it much more serene and empty and some want it really busy and happy, or do you feel that or have you developed the style that's like your style?
We've tried to stay pretty neutral in terms of that. So
okay.
We've developed a style that we think works for the brand, because
mm-hmm.
the brand of WeWork is something that's very consistent, and it's been developed over, you know, the last 10 years. So mm-hmm. when we started developing what our style of these images is, we wanted to be consistent across all markets.
Right.
So that way, you know, we're not giving one market something completely different than another market, because we want that brand to
that
remain as strong.
Totally makes sense.
Recognizable.
Yeah.
You know you're at a WeWork. So we show you a rendering in China and a rendering in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, the goal kind of is that you don't know which one's which, but those unique moments in each one set it apart. But generally, the WeWork is a product.
Well, it must be also a sense of familiarity, right? Because if you have to be in different WeWorks around the globe for some reason, you'll, like, every WeWork I go to, I know what it's like. You know what I mean? It feels
yeah.
similar.
Yeah, it's not just what it looks like, it's how these places are managed by the community
right.
team.
Right.
And so the front desk associate, the community team that really runs and manages the locations,
mm-hmm.
you get that energy and that safety net that you can rely on that team in New York. And then you're right. If you go to somewhere on the West Coast, you'll get the same family of community members that really take care of you. So that's really the biggest sort of selling point of WeWork as a business.
Right. So obviously you do these day in and day out, right? That's the thing you guys are familiar with. So can you give people an idea? You mentioned you don't do it for every market, like you don't need it for New York because everyone knows what a WeWork looks like, I guess. But how many do you go through like in a week? How many spaces do you create and visualize?
Well, see, people don't believe us when we give that answer.
Okay.
So we do one project takes 8 to 10 days with an average of 9.6 days. Start to finish, 6 images, done.
Okay.
And so each team does probably 2.5 projects a month, and we have 8 teams, so we're looking at upwards of 20 unique projects a month.
Okay, that's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Somebody, I think there was this woman we had met along the way at some other conference, and Jake said, yeah, typically your project's 10 days, and she didn't believe us at all, and even made a quick little joke about it, and then watched the presentation I gave, and went into detail about how that's possible, and then that pretty much
right
answered that.
Yeah, so it's the automation that we've done to get the efficiency kind of down to what we need it to be to right. say, you know, now this is 10 days is all we need to turn around a project because we know exactly what we need to do.
Right.
It's like we're not trying to reinvent the wheel over and over. It's a very consistent process now.
Yeah, I'm assuming that even though you said that a lot of it is similar, you don't want to repeat tasks that don't need to be repeated, right?
Right, yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense.
That's why we really like to allow our team to, you know, take the initiative of trying something new. New cameras, mm-hmm. New lighting, things that they feel that they want to work on because we have the time now.
Okay.
For more R&D, or I say 10 days, but if they want to try something new, we can push that deadline.
Okay.
A day, because we are in full control of the entire project.
Right. You're your own customer.
Yeah, so, and the teams that work on these projects, they set their own deadlines.
Right.
But they just kind of have to keep the different phases of the project within, in and around a 10-day time frame.
Got it. And where's your office located?
Headquarters is in New York.
Okay.
Chelsea, Manhattan.
Yeah.
But we have headquarters all around the world.
I can imagine. How many locations, WeWork locations, are there as of now?
Let me pull up. We just got a new number here.
And I should add, we also have a visualization team in London as well.
Okay.
So our team is divided in between half in New York, half in London.
Well, that helps with time zones too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
I think we're around 485 locations.
Okay.
That equals about 470,000 members, which are people that work in a WeWork space. 125, I don't know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those numbers double every year.
Right.
We're extremely high growth. And part of the reason why we decided to really lock down a standardized sort of process, because these workflows need to be scalable. When you have one person making one decision about all of this work, that's not scalable. So
right.
We really put a lot of responsibility on the teams to kind of act as their own creative directors.
Got it.
And so I can trust each one of those teams to deliver a product in the same way as any other team.
Right.
And that's the consistency, and that is a scalable system for us.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the idea of what these spaces are and how people work are fascinating. I think that it's really freeing for people to be entrepreneurs now, you know? Like, there's a lot, because opening an office is a pain in the ass, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And especially a lot of companies, whether it be a 5 to 10 person company that maybe perhaps expected their team to grow to 40,
right.
But they didn't, and they're not doing as well as they should, but yet they're locked into a 10 to 15 year lease, they're kind of screwed.
Right.
And so WeWork really allows the flexibility in case you increase, we'll move you into a location that better suits your needs. Or when you decrease in, let's say, a downturn in the market,
right.
We could facilitate, you know, that move a lot easier than having to sit on a lease and perhaps rent out space.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a, you scale up and scale down really easily, right? I'm much more flexible that way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you don't have to worry about furniture, you don't have to worry about cleaning crew, you don't have to worry about, you know, you can schedule a meeting room and then, you know, yeah. And you have a receptionist and get your mail there, you can do all that stuff.
Absolutely. And then, you know, a lot of these locations, it's the community that all of a sudden your need of a graphic designer as a, let's say, law firm.
Right.
And they need someone to redo a logo and you just happen to meet somebody in the pantry.
Right.
That does graphic design in your location. So there's instant networking. There's instant communication and just, you know, everybody's kind of really feels like they're all in it together.
Right.
In some of these locations. And it's beautiful when you hear some of these stories that come out of it, a lot of the collaborations that happen. So it's just a cool way of looking at it.
Right. So you said you, how old is we work approximately?
It's 9.5 years, almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years. And you said you guys have been around for about 4 years?
I mean, we could round up, but the actual number is like 3.5.
3.5 years.
Okay. Is that when you guys started looking at these visualization ideas and techniques?
No, honestly, not really. We came from backgrounds that had a very particular workflow.
Okay.
And we were hired as visualization artists. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily at this moment was I asked to run and be the head of a department. They just asked me to come on board and start doing renderings. And so we just latched on to previous workflows.
Okay. So where did you come from?
We both worked at Kilograph in Los Angeles.
Kilograph. Yeah.
And
with Keely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was there for about 3.5 years, and you know, then
that long? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Once it was time to move on, you had already moved back to New York.
Right.
And you know, it was like such an opportunity for us to come on board at WeWork at the time, because WeWork was just kind of coming above the horizon for a lot of designers,
right?
Not knowing exactly what it was and what it meant. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they had just purchased an architecture firm. So this real estate company that was WeWork now had an in-house architecture firm, and they needed renderers. And it was kind of like the horizon was like wide open for us.
Right.
Yeah, we set a lot of boundaries right away. Once we realized how fast this was going to grow, because we were just becoming global at that point. And then you just catch wind of like, wait, these numbers are doubling every single month.
Right.
Okay, let's set the groundwork now, because it's brand new. We have opportunities to say no very early on.
Right.
Because we're finishers. We're very high end stuff. So we really made note to the people above saying, it's like, hey, we're not an in-house architectural rendering team.
Okay.
We don't do design iteration renderings.
Mm-hmm.
We don't work alongside to make those types of decisions because it's not scalable. We need to rely on the architects and designers to do those iterations in-house using software like Enscape, SketchUp even. And that allows them to not rely on us and vice versa. And then we then come on only when the design is 100% finished.
Okay.
So that builds on top of our 10-day timeline. Once they deliver the full design package, the exporter Revit models, we don't talk to them ever again.
Interesting.
And we just run with it. If we have questions, of course, but generally there's no back and forth. They're like, you do your job, it's going to look great. I don't need to pick cameras or, you know, we'll switch out chairs and fabrics without telling them, because we believe sometimes in the composition and story we want to tell. We'll kind of just move things around.
Sure.
And nobody knows.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we were very fortunate at the beginning to kind of set ourselves up as more of an independent studio within WeWork instead of being attached to the design team.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that doesn't mean that we're not part of the growth of the design department. We work, as much as our work is more for marketing and sales, we try to align our long-term sort of goals based upon the design department, because we believe that in the long run, we are both kind of connected as much as how we're trying to sell WeWork as a product. So the ideas and you know, long-term goals of our design team kind of mirrors where we kind of see our renderings going. That kind of makes any sense. I mean, hey, we could, this company changes every 6 months. So you could find us working for the lawyers at some point, who knows?
Right.
Or we could, I like to tell my team that I don't know what happens in 3 months, 6 months.
Okay.
A lot of things can happen. So again, it's all part of this process that we're kind of in this together, experiencing these big moments at WeWork and then deciding how to mold and blend and shift around.
Yeah, being adaptive has allowed us to kind of help different teams in different ways throughout the years, whereas we might have done a lot of renderings for one team in the past, and now that we have so many more people, we're allowed to kind of branch out and help other teams in different ways mm-hmm. we might not have thought of, you know, just 6 months ago.
Right.
Yeah, we hired, just to put it in perspective, it was just me and Jake for 2 years.
Okay, yep.
And then this year we hired 16 people.
Got it.
Just like that.
Sounds like Chaos Group. It was just Vlado and Peter for about 5-6 years.
Yeah, we're just
and
like
now
them.
It's just, now it's, now it's over 300 people in the company.
Wow. That many?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's cool. And you know what? Sometimes it's good to start, if you're sort of starting new ideas, mm-hmm. start with a small team.
Hash them out,
try them out, break
fail.
Them. Fail. Yep. And then as you learn, it's like, okay, now we feel ready to start ramping
and,
up.
Yeah, it hit a really good point for us to have that hyper growth because we started outlining, like Jake kind of just said one day, is like, we need to just change everything. How we look at a project, how we set up cameras, everything needs to change. And so as when we started committing to a new style,
right,
we then were able to create documentation for that style.
Okay.
Standards for that style. The reason why we do it, because we've done so many times and this is the best way to do it.
Okay.
And that changes throughout time, but we have a full textbook, would you say, digital textbook, that when the new hires finally came on, we're like, here it is. This is how we use Corona, why we use Corona. This is how we do our entourage. This is how we do lighting, camera, setting, folder structure. What to do at the end of a project, how to talk to the designers. Everything is documented, which you very rarely get. Because it's usually like, oh, you're a renderer. Come on board and start rendering. We don't care about teaching you because mm-hmm. we're so busy. And that's another thing we learned is like we don't want that attitude for when new people come on board because then it's the same old,
just, right.
So it's just frustrating. But frustrating meaning for people to come on and not really understand. So
sure.
The timing was just right for our growth.
Got
we
it.
Matured enough and became more responsible for them.
Okay.
Which I think they appreciate.
Yeah.
Early on. Then they, once they learn it, it's kind of, they're ready to go far more quickly than at some other studios.
Yeah.
So besides sort of the automation tools you guys, the kit of parts that you guys do, styles that you guys follow, what are other things that you have found at WeWork to differentiate from working at a traditional archivist company or doing those types of projects?
I mean, I wish there was someone else in this conversation right now.
Okay.
Meaning that like one of the architects, because they are doing just the same sort of stuff, really crazy automation. And the way they design, we're a data-driven company.
Got it.
And we design through data. And so a lot of the stuff the architects and designers are creating are very new, mm-hmm. proprietary. They're very unique because in an architecture firm, you could work there, design something for 12 years and you'll never see it built. Same thing by working at a visualization studio. You'll work on a project for 9 months and
right.
never see that building built. So
right.
for us, every single project we've ever done has been built within 3 to 6 months.
Right.
And it's great. So then they send us the photos of the opening day. I'm like, look at that. That looks just like it. And so now they've started taking the exact same cameras that are renderings. And we're very, it's so great to see them side by side.
Nice.
And so it's just the pace of WeWork is so unique.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even close to a traditional architecture firm.
Right.
I think something we should touch on also is we're our own client.
Yeah.
So that...
I was going to mention that.
That obviously allows us to do so many more things, or so many more, like, less things, too. It's good and it's bad, but for a lot of reasons, it's been beneficial to us.
Right, because archivist companies are usually service companies, or mm-hmm. a service company, right? Just like an architect is. And sometimes that makes an archivist company a service company of a service company. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but you're working directly for the realtor. You are the realtor.
We are the realtor.
We're not an in-house viz team, and we're not an architectural visualization client-facing team.
Right.
We've created something that doesn't exist.
We're a marketing team, essentially.
You're a marketing team. Yeah, your stuff goes on the website and brochures and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. I imagine you've worked with salespeople. They're a little pushy.
Yeah.
They want something done, no matter what it takes, as soon as possible.
Right.
And that's fine. But once they do get it, the regional sales teams mm-hmm. just like put in all these decks that are very unique to potential new members mm-hmm. and enterprise clients. And it's the number one sales tool that they said, no matter what. And so it really goes to all emails and social media. Mm-hmm. It's just a blast.
Yeah, so the images that we create, we might not be able to even see them on the website sometimes, but, you know, we send them out and we don't know exactly where they're going sometimes, but then, you know, we'll get these messages back like, thank you so much for these images. The sales team will publish them on their LinkedIn and everything, and it will be automatically a boost in sales for that location because of the 10 days we've spent on the project.
Right.
And, you know, it makes a big impact when you multiply that over, you know, however many projects
that's
we're doing a month.
Relatively cheap considering
we can't really
how much
quantify
real
it.
Yeah. Well,
because we have no idea of what our renderings mean to desks.
Right.
But there's some correlation there.
There's.
Well, it's hard. It's really hard to quantify marketing. Like, you know, you can do a campaign about something. And it's like, how does that translate to direct sales? Unless you say.
Yeah, I guess you can't.
Unless you say, here's a coupon for this, and how many coupons get, like, come in, then you know how many sales you have. But
yeah,
that's
we're just
about
like giving
it.
Out rendering coupons. You're like, if you like it this much, use this coupon.
Right. Yeah. Offer code.
We could do that. Yeah.
Genius.
Each rendering will have, like, a QR code.
But I actually think that's, you know, well, you could. You could basically, like, each rendering could have a QR code on it. Then you could figure out where people were clicking on the QR code. Know exactly how much you're rendering. And then you can see, and he's like, okay, this rendering costs this much to do in man hours, and this is how much revenue it brought back in.
That's data in visualization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
I think so.
Data-driven company, that's how you monetize it, you know.
Jeez.
But anyway, marketing is a challenging thing. It's definitely a challenging thing. You don't know, you don't know how it's going to get used. You don't know how people respond to it. There is obviously a massive, massive need for images. Images can sell way more than anything, right? Because mm-hmm. it's real when you put it in an image.
Yep.
Now, I was looking at your website. There's you guys do a lot of other things besides real estate space.
Yes. A major business line of ours is enterprise.
Okay.
Enterprise clients. So Fortune 500 companies, 33% of all Fortune 500 companies work in a WeWork.
Really?
Yeah. And if they don't work in a WeWork, they can, if they want to, approach us, say, hey, we have our own lease.
Right.
We want you to come in, design, and manage the space for us. And that's a service we provide.
Oh,
so therefore, we do have a client at that point.
So what we said before about not having clients was a past tense.
Yeah, we would just like to say that and let everybody believe that we never have clients.
Because
and then at the end, we'll come in and say we have clients.
Part of our
you sell the WeWork experience as a service.
Correct.
Yes. And so then our team comes in and does the same sort of thing, but there is back and forth between the client that the architects and designers have. We don't communicate with the client, which is nice.
So, okay, so let's say, all right, let's say you're a big company, whatever, and you want to, you want the WeWork experience within your building or whatever it is. You guys will manage it. So you guys will manage that office space like it's a big WeWork, right? Will you also design it to function like a WeWork?
Yes.
And your architects will design that?
Sometimes working with that company's design team too. So it's a collaboration of their design aesthetic and their branding mixed with our way of designing a community experience of is a WeWork.
Okay.
So it's the two different design styles meeting in the middle.
Right.
And then coming up with a solution that best suits different companies' needs, because each one is completely different.
So then do you guys do the visualization for that?
Yes.
Okay, so you, that's a unique kind of visualization. This, that's not like just, you know, doing another WeWork somewhere, right?
Yeah, because we'll come in like the envisioning stage, which is like really selling the vibe and the whole design aesthetic of a place.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll come in at the very end and do final renderings to show what the design has gone through.
Right.
And then show the client.
So that's a longer time than 9 days.
It's shorter sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
So yeah, it depends. If it's an envisioning project, which is WeWork is pitching that we want to take over this person's office.
Right.
You know, we then work with the design team in a very short period of time, like 5 days or something, to turn around some renderings for a concept that they want to present to this company.
Okay.
So we work on the front end of that. So that's shorter time period. But then the longer time period comes when the project's approved, it's moving forward. We then kind of go through phases where, you know, we're doing these two floors first.
Right.
That's going to take 2 weeks. Then we're going to do these two floors next. That's going to take another 2 weeks. So those projects kind of happen in phases.
Got it.
Which could go on for years.
Yeah,
you know, so I can imagine. You know, then 6 months they'll come back and be like, "Okay, we're ready for our third floor." So, those accounts, let's say, are ongoing.
Got
so, and all of a sudden they'll just come in. We clear our schedule completely to move on to that.
Got it.
Because we're flexible with our rework queue, so
okay.
that allows us to take really high profile jobs like right away. They cut the line, so to speak.
Right. Which is great because that, you know, I guess let's say it's like, oh, yeah, well, those renderings that I was going to give you next week, they're going to have to wait another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah, because we're like 6 months ahead of schedule. So sales has to wait another week and a half.
Yeah.
They're fine.
It's okay because, you know, WeWork has no client. So when we do have a client, that usually takes a higher priority.
And they understand. They're like, okay. You got a bunch of enterprise work to do.
Six months ahead of schedule. Explain.
Okay. Well, every region is different. So, for example, we are doing some. Okay, let me start over. So, the sales looks at us.
Okay.
To have these renderings done as soon as possible, and based upon what we know, that's typically sits around the 3 to 6 month mark. That's kind of like the buffer of when you should expect the set of renderings.
Mm-hmm.
And each region is different.
So okay.
So in the United States, we're doing renderings in 2020 already.
Okay.
But in China, you know, that time frame and just the way that design process is, we are very rarely ahead of schedule that much. Sometimes we only do it. Sometimes our content isn't released until 1 to 2 months before opening. And sometimes that's too close. So therefore, we won't even do that project because the impact isn't high enough for those renderings.
Okay.
So we try and find a balance. So that's why it's important to have a really strict criteria set in place as to what takes priority on a global scale. And that's something the marketing and sales team outlines.
Okay.
So then we're able to, we don't have to fish around and figure out what to do. We're kind of being told what to do. But we're flexible based upon the region, which is good. And if we're talking about how companies scale, it wasn't scalable when it was just up to Jake and myself of what to do.
Right.
Right. So now that we've kind of given up some of that responsibility for marketing to say, these projects are important because an actual desk count, you know, we have like a few criteria that right. qualify for what top priority is. If it's a new market, if it has a high desk count, that's like top of our list. So okay. once we kind of gave that responsibility to the marketing team to kind of help us decide which projects we'll take on, mm-hmm. that's allowed us to build out this like kind of 6 months schedule.
Right.
And when he says high desk count, that just means the number of potential members
right.
in a space. So a lot of these locations, they might be in a scaling market, but only have 250 desks. And let's say we could attach an imaginary number of 5% to that 200 desks. Sure, that's great, but that isn't as impactful as 5% of a 4,000 desk location.
Right.
So if we're thinking about global sales and just numbers across the board, mm-hmm. then we latch on to the bigger projects and have to say sorry to the smaller ones sometimes.
Right.
But if that small one is a new market,
okay.
we have to do it, even if it's 250 desks, because there's no footprint in that location.
Right.
There's nothing there. So that's a fair trade-off for us.
Well, with your growth right now, and obviously the priorities of new markets, how you must be approaching more and more new markets all the time, right?
Yes.
Well, New York has got to be your biggest city because that's where your headquarters
yes.
is.
So. Yeah, the most square footage is in New York and London.
Okay.
But in a year and a half, China could be the leading one. I don't know.
Right.
Like, New York is no longer the powerhouse of WeWork.
Interesting.
Because all yeah. these other ones are growing to be bigger, if not.
Yeah.
Growing to be the same size, if not bigger.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just a wave that, like, and regions pick up. Sometimes yeah. Latin America has a few openings this quarter. And yeah. it's all China, but then the seasons are different. So it's high season for Latin America, let's say, and it's low season.
You know, interesting.
So there's so many realms. And so being at WeWork, we're beginning to understand so many other parts of a design process. When it becomes the real estate, the lease term, names, like we kind of understand what architecture is, the design, the art and graphics, sales, right. operations, community, like every part of the way, we're kind of in it. So we're learning so much, and we're not just doing renderings.
Right. Okay. What else are you doing?
We're figuring out, you know, ways to work with people that need our services in a way that, like, they come to us, like a whole new department will come to us, be like, hey, we hear you guys are the ones creating all these renderings. And I'm like, okay, yeah. what do you want? Well, we need kind of product renderings of all our furniture, because we use the same sort of furniture. So sometimes we're doing like product style renderings because okay. they have to create an app, let's say.
Okay.
And so, but they need renderings of all the pieces of furniture.
Oh, right. Because if you're going to rent a space, yeah. you probably have a selection of furniture that can set you up with.
Yeah. Right? So yeah, a lot of these yeah. teams are experimenting with ways to sell our product.
Right.
And oftentimes we need to document what a 10-person office looks like, a 6, an mm-hmm. 8, and we can update their graphic standards by doing high-res renderings, so it's not just black and white,
right.
black and white lines. So every little department can use us, and so we're learning how to adapt our skill set to allow high impact in such a high-growth company.
Got it. Interesting. So I want to find out a little bit about your background, which led you to this, and find out where that came from. You mentioned, obviously, you guys worked at Kilograph. That's an arc-based company. But what did you do before that?
Before that, I was in university in Minnesota. I went to school for landscape architecture.
Okay.
So I had a pretty traditional arc-viz starting where I didn't really like designing my projects as much as I did like rendering them.
yeah.
So I think it's like a classic thing in ArcViz that I realized that if I put more time into the renderings than the design of my project, I would still get the same grade. So I knew kind of my third or fourth year of school that this is kind of a career path that I wanted to choose.
Yeah.
And so then after university, that's when I moved out to Los Angeles and found the job out there.
Interesting. Yeah, it's I don't want to say dissimilar, but for me, I was at Gensler for years. And I was a good designer and I wanted to be a good designer, but they said, well, we can find designers. We just can't find people who can do renderings like you.
It's like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay. So anyway, ended up changing a few things, but it was interesting to do that for sure. I still think visualization is a lot of fun. I think it's really cool to see that. I also think it's really cool that you guys get the opportunity to see your designs, right. Your renderings designed
that
in reality. Happens. Yeah.
Or it happens years later.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's fun to be a part of that process, especially when, you know, we're good friends with the designers and architects who are working on it.
Mm-hmm. Then they're right there.
So some of the projects that we've, you know, rendered have become a little bit of passion projects for us because, you know, so and so is our friend that, you know, mm-hmm. we hang out with all the time, and now we're rendering it and he's working on it, and then, you know, a month later we get to go to the opening of it, and it's kind of like crazy to see something that you've just spent so much time working on
right
come to fruition so quickly.
Yep. I can imagine. Do you guys ever dabble in doing any kind of other things like animations or other kind of commercials, or because you guys could probably do all that stuff?
So there are already teams that do animations and already teams that do commercials, so
okay.
It's like we company has every single job imaginable.
Okay.
Solved for.
Interesting.
From just like that list that I ran down earlier. But as far as our skill set and what we kind of like to do, actually, Jake, you could probably explain this better.
I think it's been evolving over time, where the workflow that we've set up now is, we'll call it the baseline, right? So mm-hmm. now that we have all these artists who have kind of elevated themselves to this baseline Corona workflow, you know, that's our responsibility to the company
okay.
to provide these WeWork marketing images.
Right.
And now that we are meeting these requirements, you know, we're meeting the enterprise client requirements. Once we've established this baseline,
mm-hmm.
our next growth is now kind of, you know, pushing ourselves beyond that to see what more we can offer.
Okay.
So we have some new design teams that have come in and say, you know, we're thinking about pushing the boundaries of what architecture at WeWork means.
Okay.
And we're doing full build out projects, full buildings.
Right.
Could you guys do some, you know, Unreal projects for us? And
okay.
you know, that gives us the opportunity, once we've got that baseline established, to say, okay, I think we can spare a couple artists to take on this new initiative to kind of up that offering level.
Right.
So we've started some Unreal projects lately. We've done some animations recently, you know, just kind of for fun, for mm-hmm. giving back to the team, you know, spend an extra day doing mm-hmm. an animation.
Right.
So that eventually I think will kind of lead more into marketing stuff once the marketing team realizes, you know, what we're capable of. But we can't let it detract from our initial offering.
Right. What about your tools? I mean, you mentioned that you guys are using Corona for all your rendering, right? And you guys have, is that what you guys always have been using, or?
We used V-Ray for about a year.
Okay.
When we first started the team.
And, yeah.
I believe, yeah, Greg went to a conference. Yeah.
The State of Art 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently. Yeah, when they had just kind of were introducing Corona and said, you know, we got to try it. And
okay.
as soon as we tried it, you know, we kind of like fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because of our workflow and what we do day in and day out, Corona just fit our need.
Okay.
Just better. If we were to be doing exteriors or much larger scale, we'd probably be relying more heavily on V-Ray.
Okay.
But for a scalable system, it was Corona that allowed us to quickly go through what we needed to get through and not spend too much time really focusing in well, Matt's sort of part of it. He's okay. Like, hey, to us, it's just an engine.
Right.
It allows us to get something done faster because we need to.
Right.
Because we have 20 projects due this month.
Yeah. I mean, we believe very closely in Corona. That's why we kind of acquired them. But it's interesting because they're the ones that approached us about wanting to be part of our company.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, they're really cool. And Vlado is a very rational and good person and said, yeah, let's talk. This is interesting. And we've both companies or both render engines have benefited from each other's mm-hmm. relationships, right? So it freed them up to focus on some of those things that they wanted to focus on. And then there a lot of stuff that was interesting about, you know, Corona was able to influence V-Ray and vice versa, right? So working with the Corona guys has been really great. And they're doing some amazing technology. They're going to be showcasing some pretty cool stuff that I can't talk about right now. But it'll be about tomorrow. So mm-hmm. I'm excited for them, and I think that they're going to be doing some really cool work. I think also, I mean, you mentioned earlier that it's like if it was more exteriors or bigger scale, V-Ray might be better suited. And that's not to say that Corona is not suited for that, but what Corona does seem to excel, and probably some of the things that you mentioned, is some really good at interior spaces, right? Mm-hmm. What do you feel is its strength in the interior space?
The strength is, for me, it's the GI.
The GI?
The bounce light that you get when you're using an HDRI or like a dome light.
Right.
Is something that is quicker to achieve a bright exposure in the interior mm-hmm. without kind of dialing in a lot of settings that I was kind of previously doing in V-Ray.
Okay. So you could get the same result in V-Ray, except that it's more intuitive and it gets there faster in Corona.
Yeah. So early on, we latched into the interactive rendering that was offered right away in Corona. Mm-hmm. And once... I think we adapted the program right when the light mix setting came out.
Okay.
So for us, the workflow became, you know, let's just chuck a bunch of lights in the scene, set them all to 50, mm-hmm. throw in an HDRI, then we're going to hit interactive render. And once I've, you know, kind of established each light onto its own light mix, you can then just kind of set the lighting as you're going rather than stop, test, which was a previous workflow that we were doing.
All right, well, let me just to clarify what you're doing so that people understand a little better. Because some people may not actually know about Corona stuff.
Sure.
And some people may not, I mean, I know some people here who come from the visual effects world is like, what's Corona? I've never heard of Corona. And so Corona is a renderer that is actually owned by Chaos Group. And it's technically it was a competitor to V-Ray. But we, like I said, we work with them really closely and a lot of stuff has gone together. But one of the things that people really love about Corona is the light mixer. And there's a lot of things, but specifically your workflow. And I think it's really brilliant because in an architecture interior scene, you actually can have a lot of lights, right? You can have a ton of lights and, that can heavily influence the look of a space, right? So what the light mixer does, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're doing is you set all the lights to the same value. And then with the light mixer, it's like literally like a mixing board where you add more sound, less sound. You can also change color, I'm assuming, too,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So you, because light is additive, you basically just add more, multiply up the light, multiply down the light, and then you add up the result of all of them together.
Yep.
And then once you've done that, then you can transfer all those settings to the final lighting?
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
And then it says, okay, transfer all that stuff, and then now you're all set to go and just hit render.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
I mean, yeah.
It works great. Yeah. That was.
And you're doing it interactively, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly haven't done a project in like a year and a half.
I haven't.
So whatever he says, I'm just gonna say, uh huh. That sounds great.
I mean, it's really sad is I'm known as like the big V-Ray expert, and yeah. I have an open V-Ray in like 2 months.
They won't even let me go. They won't even let me go near a project.
So it's sad. I'm admitting that while being recorded, but yeah, it's interesting to do that. I think it's a great workflow, and I think it, you know, obviously it just got to make your life so much easier, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And for artists, new artists, coming in,
and there's a work
within a week because it's all documented. You know, they're just comfortable. They don't have to be nervous about learning a new software. Like, we tell them, like, we use Corona, but we also reiterate, it's like, hey, but it's okay. Like, you're not going to lose your mind and feel that you're inadequate because you're switching softwares in this company.
Right.
You know, it lends itself to, you know, learning.
I don't think anyone would should feel inferior or inadequate for using Corona.
No, meaning just like meaning if they join a new team and they yeah. feel like everybody's using this software and they just have to learn it and they're not there yet.
Oh, yeah.
So they feel kind of like bummed.
Okay, let's go through that. The learning curve for Corona is extremely shallow, right?
Yeah. It's pretty much out of the box.
Right.
Although
Andra was basically saying he was heavily inspired by V-Ray. So they're like, if you know V-Ray, you could know Corona really easily.
Yeah. So yes. I think for me, just the biggest learning curve is understanding how the material translates to V-Ray values. There's a few different categories that exist in V-Ray that don't in Corona, or vice versa. You know, specular maps don't exist in Corona because it's more the PBR based. At least that was the old V-Ray that I knew. I'm not sure if it's changed now.
V-Ray now does have a PBR thing.
Okay, yeah. So that was one thing that
I'm not always a fan of PBR.
Yeah.
Because I just, it's literally a pet peeve of mine. The term metalness is the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Yeah, and unreal too.
I know, like, because there's no, something is either a metal or not a metal.
And it's not in between.
It's not. There's not like plastimetal.
That's funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a variable.
No.
It's very true.
If you open up a physics book, you don't look up the term metalness, and they call it physically based materials. But anyway, it's fine. But it is a useful thing, right? And PBR materials are useful because the reason they exist, they came from the video game world, and it basically allowed people in the video game world to do the same kind of materials with fewer maps, which is what they need to do because they don't have that much space on video cards.
Yeah.
So they did that. But what's also interesting is that then there's companies like Substance Designer, right? Where they basically said, okay, we're going to make a workflow for making textures for games, and so they do it at PBR based. But then people take Substance Designer and use it for architecture. So now architects are using PBR.
Right,
so it all comes from like a memory management problem for video games and now transfers to the entire computer graphics world.
Spread through the whole industry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. But I think, obviously I think you guys are doing some really interesting work. That's why I want to have you guys on the podcast, find out more about it and see that workflow, because I think it's good. I think people can really benefit from it. The other thing that was interesting, you know, because I was just browsing through your website, because there's so much stuff that's there. And then I looked at it, it's like, you know, Claudia, look at the careers thing. And I looked at the careers and it's like, there are so many jobs at WeWork in so many different areas.
Well, yeah. The thing is,
everything.
Like, I was employee maybe like 1,200 something.
Okay.
And now we're at over 13,000. Wouldn't be surprised if we hit 15,000 by the end of the year, and then 20,000 sometime.
That's not
small. I think it's about, we hire around 500 people a month.
That's crazy.
They're not all renderers.
Yeah, because there was one thing, it was like a technology area, had 300 positions.
Yeah,
it's absurd.
So we've got this whole...
There's also people who manage the spaces, right? So those are
the biggest. The community jobs. Like every time a building opens, there are just a minimum of like 30 people that need to just run it, clean it.
Yeah.
The associates that come in the morning and at night to clean. And so, because every day it turns over, they clean it.
Right.
And then you have a community team that runs the entire building. So you think we're just always be hiring. So for 20 locations.
Now that WeWork owns all these locations, all these real estate, or are they franchises in a sense?
No.
Or they're leased from spaces and then managed by...
They're leased from the landlord and then...
You manage them?
Yes.
Okay. And then they... If I go to WeWork, I pay you, but then the overall goes back to the landlord.
Correct.
All right. Makes sense. Yeah. really smart.
Pretty ingenious, yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty ingenious. And in a day, in today's world where there's so many people that have an entrepreneurial spirit and want to start a small business or have to downsize, or there's so many situations where that makes a lot of sense to do that.
Yeah, even rendering teams, you know, we've...
Probably a small archivist companies can work at a WeWork really easy.
You go through some of the buildings in New York and you'll see, you know, you look in the glass and they've got some renderings pinned up on their walls.
Right.
And, you know, it's a little rendering company. And, yeah, we were watching the Kitbash 3D award live stream just a couple weeks ago.
You know? I know the guy who runs that.
We were all watching it, you know, at our office. And, you know, we flip it on. This was the first one we had seen. And they're like, hey, they're all sitting there and they've all got WeWork mugs. The guys are working out of a WeWork in Los Angeles. And, you know, we're in the group chat. And
I didn't know that.
We said,
I just got an email from Max today. He's the owner. Of, and so I was like, I should.
Ronan Beckerman's in a WeWork in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So we've heard a few stories over the years of like rendering guys, you know, reaching out to us like, hey, what do you guys do? You know, because I work from a WeWork. And,
right.
You know, I didn't know they had a rendering team.
Right.
So we've talked to Ronan a couple of times about it. And the Kitbash guys were like, yeah, reach out to us. I want to hear what you guys do.
Right.
I think that really, it's part of the reason why we're here at Total Chaos.
Yeah.
Is because we've grown so much that 'tis the season of conferences. We've gotten a few invitations. And, like, this is a very big moment for us to introduce ourselves the same way we're doing it right now.
Right.
To everybody that stops us in the middle of the hallway, to the presentation I'm giving tomorrow and the presentation Jake just gave.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of people saying, holy, I had no idea that even existed. You guys even existed.
Right.
Well, they didn't even know what WeWork and the WE company was. So for us, as much as we love talking about what we do as technical artists, this is a very big opportunity to really showcase what WeWork is doing as a whole.
Right.
And then so if people can understand that, then they can certainly understand the need for us.
Right. Right. Well, that's cool, guys. We're just about an hour, so this is perfect. Is there anything, I mean, you mentioned hiring. You guys looking for more people in certain areas?
Yes.
Okay.
We're always looking for talent. It's
yeah.
a matter of whether or not we can hire the talent at this time.
Right.
But we're looking into getting involved with more real-time rendering. That hasn't been completely flushed out and what that looks like.
Right.
So in the future, I think we'll be looking into getting some designated teams just for that, because we feel like that real-time rendering pipeline and workflow has its benefits within WeWork. And so that's something we're going to look into. But we're always looking to hire top talent when we get it.
Yeah, that's cool. You know what you guys should also do? WeWork the game, where you basically have a WeWork office and you have all these little businesses, and it's like The Sims, but with entrepreneurs, and see how which ones fail and succeed and how they cross-communicate.
And hey, we have the models.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. WeWork the game, I think, would be amazing.
We could do that. I'm sure someone.
If we start talking about real-time rendering and regaming, just like, what about WeWork the game?
I know. Then some of the projects we've done with Unreal so far have a bunch of 3D people, and some of the CEOs are like, hey, can you put me in there? Can you put my face on one of these guys?
Like, yeah, nice.
So that's sure. That's the beginning of the game.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Hopefully you guys are having a good time in Sofia. I know it's only the first day, but there's plenty more to be doing. So I'm
absolutely
sure we'll be seeing you guys around. Tomorrow's the big opening. Don't miss the keynote. It's going to be, you know, big. So anyway.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.